Welcome one and all once again to New Road in episode 44. Joining me this week, we have Adrian.
How's it going, guys?
And Chad.
Yo, yo, internet.
I mean, you should introduce Daniel, and he says as usual, but he seems to be MIA this week, and I don't know why. That's kind of curious. Even though PAX is this weekend, and, you know, PAX sounds like an awesome show, I want to get out to one, yeah, there has really not been much in the way of video game news this week. So I actually kind of wanted to get it out of the way early so that we could probably open it up for different discussions at the second half of this podcast. So I guess we'll start off with the announcement that Sonic CD is coming to most digital platforms at the end of this year. I mean, I think it's Xbox Live Arcade, it's PSN,
yep.
It's Windows 7 Phone, it's Android, it's iPhone devices. I think that it's PC.
Yeah.
So you get almost every major thing except for 3DS eyewear.
All I know is I definitely don't want to be playing Sonic CD on my iPhone. I don't know. I've played a number of like emulators, and if it's anything like that, then it's gonna be not that great. I don't like touch like controllers. I'm not a big fan of that.
I don't think anybody likes them except for people who don't know better.
Yeah, they're just like, "Ooh, this is awesome." Yeah, no, not a fan.
I don't want to harp on those people too much, but I've tried and I've tried and I've tried, and I just don't. I don't like that whole idea of replicating analog sticks and buttons with a touchpad, because then half of the screen real estate is taken up by your fingers.
I agree.
It's not as precise.
Like, it's kind of similar to Rage HD, where you have to aim by moving. You have, like, one thumb to aim, and, it's funny because you'll, like, be obscuring the enemies with your thumb that you're using to aim, and it's just, like, it's a problem with mobile gaming. I appreciate people trying to make these, like, genres work on mobiles, but when it's that, you know, like, crippled, I feel like it's not really all that worth it.
Yeah, there's a reason games like Angry Birds and Cut the Rope and Fruit Ninja are popular on Android devices, and that's because they don't try to replicate
exactly
console experiences. They catered for the devices, and they work for those devices.
I agree 100%.
So, yeah. As I said, and it's the same complaint I had with Sonic Generations, is I still find it odd that Sega doesn't find some way to put these games on a Nintendo platform.
Yeah.
And this isn't just me speaking because I'm, you know, a Nintendo fanboy or whatever, but we've seen over the past decade that if Sonic isn't on a Sega system, next best thing is a Nintendo system.
I could definitely agree with that.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe Sonic Colors outsold Sonic the Hedgehog, which was PS3 and 360.
Well, that's probably because Sonic Colors was a much better game, yeah.
Yes, but the fact of the matter is, if it, you know, it can outsell two games on two different platforms, they should find some way to put it on this system. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want, but I can almost go on record and saying that I think Sonic and Mario at the Summer Olympics 2012 will outdo Sonic Generations on 360 and PS3 this year.
You think so? Really?
Well, Sonic and Mario at the Summer Olympics is one of the best-selling games of this generation, I believe.
Yeah, how the hell did that happen, by the way?
That's news to me.
Well, you have the Olympics, which is like a built-in audience as it is. You have Mario, who's gaming's biggest icon, and you have Sonic, who's probably up in the top 10. And it was really their first official crossover, because I believe the game came out before Smash Brothers. So just having them in the same game, I think you kind of excited a marquee of video game, or gamers, and then you had the Olympic backing. So that just creates this whole world. And then, you know, the Wii's, you know, the audience people tend to think the Wii caters to would eat that up. We shall see how it, and yeah, to be honest, the Wii doesn't really have much competition this year.
So it's it's one of the best-selling games of this generation on any platform?
I believe so.
Oh my god.
Yeah, well, doesn't that just make your heart hurt?
I think if you look at it's the best-selling games in general for this generation, I think it would make a lot of quote-unquote hardcore gamers hurt. Because, I mean, honestly, the best-selling games of this generation either have Wii in the title or is named Call of Duty for the most part. So, yeah. And, you know, Call of Duty doesn't really have that reputation anymore. And most anything with Wii is usually seen as shovelware to most people.
Yeah, that's true. So when they have something sort of, kind of interesting, they latch onto it, basically, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So, there we go. yeah, Sonic CD is a, it's a fantastic little game. I think most people consider it the best 2D Sonic game.
You said Sonic 2 wrong. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was about to say, personally speaking, I still think Sonic 2 is the peak of the series, but some people do consider Sonic CD the best 2D game in the series. So, people can be wrong. Though I do have to say, it did start the era of awesome Sonic theme songs with Sonic Boom. So there's that. We had an announcement that Square Enix, debuted their new HD, their second HD engine, the Humanist, something or another, I really don't know. It's an engine that's coming 6 years after the 360's been out, 5 years after the PS3's been out. You would have thought it's something they would have worked on at the start of the generation and at the end of the generation. I'm sure hopefully it's future-proof so they can do it for next gen, but it's still kind of that they're kind of debuting this so late in the game, and I don't really know what game's using it.
Yeah, I wonder what the motivation is behind making a new graphics engine this late into this generation of consoles, unless it's kind of like the Unreal Engine, where they can build upon it and make something, add new features like, let's get DX11 in there and et cetera, et cetera. But until, I see it for myself, and I mean, time will tell, but if they're future-proofing it, then it'll be sweet, but...
Well, I assume that part of it is that it took them so long to get Final Fantasy 13 out to the masses. And somebody made a note of this, I believe Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 all kind of came out within a 3-year span. And then you look at the fact that this generation has been going on for 5 or 6 years now, and they've had one Final Fantasy game. I assume if they do an engine now, they can kind of, they can build Final Fantasies on it, they can build Dragon Quest, they can build, a bunch of different games on it for the next, for this generation and next generation. Because we're gonna have that weird transitional period now with the Wii U kind of cutting off the eggs.
That's true,
generation, but not starting it officially. So, you're gonna have that period where you're kind of in between, so you do wanna kind of start prepping for the future. But, the 360 and the PS3 are still viable platforms to sell your games on for certain people.
I think that it's kind of like not the right thing that they should be doing. I mean, from what I've heard about Deus Ex, I hear that it's not the most graphically demanding game, but it's definitely Square Enix like back on top of their game. But I'm wondering like if they're focusing that effort into graphics, are they going to also follow suit gameplay? Because if they're just trying to like redo, and brand their image, then that's fine. But if they're just trying to make their games look a little bit prettier in, sequences, then I don't really see the point.
Square Enix is kind of a company that has never had a problem espousing graphics for the sake of graphics. I mean, they're a big fan of saying, this looks really good, and, it looks really good.
Exactly. I think that's a great... there are a few exceptions to that rule, such as The Last Remnant, which... I don't know if you've ever heard of that game, but it's the worst Japanese RPG I've ever experienced in my entire life.
Yeah, it's
and it looked like crap. So, I don't know. I think that recently, with Final Fantasy 13, they have some really, really pretty games that are just very shallow, and I think that if they're investing all that effort into a, new graphics engine, then it better damn well, have graphic or gameplay that is at least up to par with that. Otherwise, it's just going to be ridiculous. I don't know.
We'll touch on this later when we get to what we've been playing, but I've recently been playing Xenoblade for this past week, and it does a lot of things I hope to see more JRPGs do going forward, because it does kind of modernize the genre while still kind of keeping it rooted in its traditional mechanics and elements. But as I said, we'll get to that in just a bit. Little King Story sequel remake, something was announced for the PSV. I honestly don't know what to make of that. It was a pretty niche game on the Wii, and I don't really see it doing much better on the PSV, but we shall see.
Well, I've never even heard of that game, to be honest with you.
That helps.
I mean, there's just a lot of these obscure titles that are kind of like making their way on a PSV. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to get in on the launch crowd, probably. They're trying to be like, oh, well, they're banking on the fact that at launch there probably won't be that many games to buy for the PS Vita. And then, you know, once they see this one, they'll be more willing to check it out because, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have other games to actually invest in. So they'll be more likely to actually pick that one up.
Well, I was going to say, it is actually a good game from all reviews. I think it averages something like 87 on Metacritic.
It's one of those ones where not a lot of people played it, but the people who played it swear by it kind of thing.
Like, oh, yeah, that's even better then. That's great. That way, like, people will be, you know, less scared to try it out, and I think that's actually a really great thing because the more people that play a game like that, the better.
And the other thing is that they also did away with the graphical style they used on the Wii, which was kind of a like watercolored paint look to it, and they just kind of went for a more not realistic, it still kind of has like this proportion, but it's kind of a more realistic style and more like polygonal than it was on the Wii. So I'm kind of curious because I've already seen it, but this is always the internet, so you always have people complaining that some people are just kind of upset that it did away with that graphical style and trying to make it a quote, you know, a bit more mature, I guess, or more styleable.
Interesting.
So we shall see. Yeah. And then we have the fact that, and this is actually from 2 weeks ago, but since we didn't have an episode last week, the PS3 dropped this price $50 in the States, and I think roughly about 50 whatever across the line, which doesn't translate as well throughout different regions, as we know from currency transfer rates and stuff like that. But what do you think it is?
I think that when people, I don't like, there was actually a really interesting like set of articles over on Destructoid about how the Japanese have begun to not really, you know, design like the Japanese, like their art styles have kind of become more Western and more mainstream. And I really think that the Japanese cannot do Western games like Western developers do Western games. Like I think that like a lot of people really enjoy the way that Japanese developers have, you know, a distinct art style, very unique gameplay for the most part. Like, look at Catherine. That's a good example of a game that doesn't like to make any compromises. And you can't expect a game like Catherine to sell like extremely well in the States as opposed to it selling in Japan. So I think that people that try to like, you know, oh, we're going to redo it, we're going to tailor it so that it matches a wider audience. Like, I think that by just retooling the graphics, you know, you may get more people to look at it, but ultimately, if your gameplay is the exact same, I think that they're just going to feel more betrayed than if they were to buy a game, wow, based on a, you know, like they say, oh, this is clearly a Japanese game, I have expectations for this now, and one, you know, whether that's a bad thing or a good thing, depending on their personal preferences. So, I don't know, I kind of think that they should stick to their guns and not try to emulate anything that we're doing in particular, and just kind of refine what they've been doing for years and have kind of fallen off of doing recently, if that makes sense.
Well, this is always a tough point because I get what you're saying, but at the same time, it is becoming harder and harder for those Japanese games to sell.
Yes.
I mean, I guess the prime example of a game where sometimes people criticize the graphics before anything else would be Wind Waker. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's coming from one of the franchises with the greatest lineages in video gaming, and people saw that it went with the cel-shaded style, and then that became the predominant thing with that game. It wasn't like this is the next Zelda or how it improves over Ocarina of Time. It's like, this is cartoony. I don't want to buy this. This is
right, game. Right.
And I think that's the same thing with certain art styles where if it's not realistic, if it's not brown and extra brown, that people start to criticize it because it, for some reason, we associate colors with being kids. So if you have too much colors, it starts to kind of, you know, people start to ignore it because it, I mean, I'm trying to think of like the most popular like franchise this generation, like shooter that has a bunch of color in it.
Well, ironically, Gears of War 3 actually has a pretty vibrant art style. And it doesn't look like it at first, but like if you look at some of the new gameplay trailers from the campaign and whatnot, it's vibrant. And I know that that sounds really weird considering the game did start off as like brown, gray, extra gray, you know, darker shades of black. And now it's really become something quite spectacular to look at, actually.
It's always something I've given credit for the Halo franchise for, is because
yep.
it is a rather colorful franchise. I mean, it's purple, it's green, it's blues, it's reds. It's not like, you know, your browns and your darker browns and your blacks and your grays and stuff like that. So that's always, I would say that would probably be the most marquee franchise. That's not a Nintendo franchise for the most part that has colors. And I guess Uncharted would be
I was just going to say, yeah, Uncharted has good.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget that game? That game is beautiful. Every level I've ever played of an Uncharted game was so varied and so just absolutely colorful and organic. I think that the Uncharted series, you know, despite it selling really well, is extremely underrated in a weird kind of way. I think that people they like it because they're like, oh, it's in the PS3 exclusive, blah, 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 blah. But I think that people really don't understand a lot of the reason that it's so, you know, they don't understand why it's such a good game. And I think that that's kind of a bummer.
I was going to say that I actually don't think the Uncharted series sells well personally. I think that it's one of those games, as you said, that I think kind of gets by being a PS3 exclusive, so people talk it up. And don't get me wrong, I love the Uncharted franchise. It's probably my favorite new franchise this generation. And I really wish it could do better, but I think at the end of the day, I don't know what it is about the game that doesn't resonate with the bulk of gamers, because, and this is something that I don't want to say to piss off people, but it is something I've noticed, and it's really something that kind of gets my nerves. It's one of the few instances. Uncharted 1 and 2 combined has sold just in Just Dance 2.
That's sick. That should not, I'm sorry, but like, Just Dance is not. I definitely think that, as much of like a mainstream appeal that Just Dance has, you know, super heavy advertising, endorsed by Lady Gaga, blah, 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 the fact that Uncharted, which is clearly an unarguably much better game, has not sold that much, just makes me really sad. Like, that's kind of goes back to what we were talking about regarding, like, the Microsoft exclusives that are, like, really, really big versus the Sony exclusives, which, you know, are kind of hit and miss.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that Uncharted is an unlockable better game, because at the end of the day, if more people are buying Just Dance and enjoying it, that technically makes it the better game for them, because at the end of the day, it is all opinions. I think Uncharted is a better traditionally made game, and it has that kind of core gameplay that we look for, but it's hard to say one's better than the other because it all comes down to opinions.
That's very true. But I think that, you know, it's kind of like a game that has, I'm not saying that production values define a game, but a game that clearly has so much more inspiration and like so much more work went into designing the graphic engine and animation system and all these, you know, little things that don't really sound all that great, but when you put them all together, it's clearly greater than the sum of its parts. And I think that that's, Uncharted is a fantastic example of that. And people just go, oh, you know, Larry Croft, which is a hilarious, you know, like little parody
title. I've not heard that before. That's good.
Larry Croft is so funny. But, you know, and they see that and they go, oh, not that special. But it's a very unique game with an actually coherent storyline, which is something we don't see much of.
I mean, that's kind of hit or miss. I like the games up until like the usual, their final act twist where they introduce some supernatural element.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That part was kind of weird, but I feel like I played Uncharted 3. I don't know like how that wraps up, but I mean, it's interesting. It's got a storyline that, you know, is fantastical, sure, and it is a little bit over the top in some ways, but it's, you know, there's like some pretty core elements of it, like having the, you know, like the relationship with Drake and Elena, and that's just something that isn't really explored too frequently in games that are like huge blockbusters or designed around the idea of being a huge blockbuster. You know, maybe we'll see something with like the new Gears of War, but I don't think it'll be explored to the extent that the Elena and Nathan, you know, thing is.
Yeah, And it is a fantastic franchise in Uncharted 3, as we'll discuss next week when we do our fall preview show. It's probably one of the key games this holiday season, and, you know, early contender for Game of the Year without saying it. Well, I actually did beta, so I have had some hands-on time with it. And finally, I guess Valve announced cross-platform play for Counter-Strike Global Offense for PC, PS3, and Mac, which is fantastic. Once again, I mean, Xbox kind of gets left out because Microsoft wants to keep a closed network, and it's their prerogative.
See, it's just, you know what's really funny is Microsoft is the Apple of gaming, you know, and then it's funny because in the PC, you know, in the personal computing, like, sphere, they are polar opposites, but I think Microsoft saw what Apple did with their products and said, let's do that with, you know, the Xbox and see how that works. And I think that there are times where you need to kind of compromise and let that thing go, because when you are literally the only console that doesn't have cross-platform play on a, you know, a Valve game, people are going to play Valve games. It's not like some little obscure game that people are just going to maybe pick up, but it's a Valve game. It's Counter-Strike. And, you know, I wasn't very impressed at first, but you watch the trailer a few times and you can go, this might be fun. You know, this might take me back to the days when I used to play, like, 1.6, like, religiously. And it's definitely going to be something that people will piss people off, you know, in addition to a number of things that have been pissing people off lately. But that's definitely the one that I think will kind of make people reconsider what Microsoft is doing with their networking.
That actually reminds me of one more thing to do before you wrap up our news segment, is the announcement that Skyrim actually has exclusive DLC on the 360 for the first 30 days. Well,
oh, okay. God damn it. Okay.
Okay, I was going to say that's an Aussie worded sentence, but any DLC is exclusive for the 360 for 30 days, and not that when it comes out there's exclusive DLC.
Does that include PC, though? Because a lot of times those exclusivity deals are just, like, among consoles.
Nobody counts PCs in these things. You know that.
Yeah, I am now. That's why I was pissed, because I'm going to get Skyrim for my PC and, like, max the shit out of that game, but...
Yeah, I don't know if it... I just know, you know, it's between PS3 and 360. I don't know if it's on the PC. I assume Microsoft and Sony really don't consider the PC counterpart to be competition.
Exactly.
So they don't really need to outsell that, because they're going to do that with their eyes closed.
I really wonder, like, do you ever wonder why games like Gears of War 3, even Gears 2, and, you know, like Halo Reach don't ever make their way on a PC? Like, it must be pretty easy to port that over.
Gears 1 did, and then...
Yeah, and that's why it's really weird that the two other ones aren't there.
I assume that Microsoft really... I mean, at the end of the day, when you break down, like, Microsoft exclusives, if you were to actually go with the ones that could have been on PC, Microsoft would have, like, Forza, and that's about it as far as, like, big exclusive titles go. Because Halo could do it. They did it with, I think, the first two.
Yep.
Fable, I think, is on the PC.
Yeah, but the thing with Fable is they're all on PC. Like, so, even though then, they, you know, took a little while to get there, they definitely all are still on PC.
And all you have for is Gears of War. And, I mean, pretty much Halo, I mean, Microsoft's staple is Gears of War and Halo, and Gears of War isn't guaranteed after the third one, so.
Yeah, which is weird to think. God, that's really weird to think. I don't know. It's just weird because you would think that they would... I understand the reasoning behind having, like, a timed exclusive. You know what I mean? Like, I understand. Like, they want people to buy Xboxes. But this late in the game when Xboxes, like, they're making a profit on everyone, they're not losing a bunch of money, I could see, you know, getting, like, a PC version of Gears 3 6 months after the one on 360 launches. You know what I mean? Like... And I would probably, in all honesty, buy both of those games. Like, I would buy the Xbox version and I would buy the PC version. And it's really weird to think that Microsoft isn't, you know, trying to do that, because it's a clear way to get more cash. You know, I don't think people will wait 6 months to buy a game that big on one console. They'll probably end up buying both of the versions of that game.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft has an interesting battle plan, what can we say? And I guess you two have anything else to add. I think that's it for our news this week.
I have one thing. I don't know if it was this week. It might have been, actually. I think, no, it was this week. Definitely was this week. And it's to me, I don't know if you know anything about this, Chad, but it was a big deal for me. Like, when I read about the fact that Origin, the new proprietary service for Battlefield 3 and EA's downloadable stuff, is actually pretty much spyware when you think about it. I read this Destructoid article, and at first I was like, no way. Yeah, okay.
I haven't heard about this, but this sounds shitty.
It's extremely shitty. So basically, when you download Origin and you run it and whatever, and since we all know that you have to use Origin for Battlefield 3 now, it's really bad because Origin, actually, if you look at the end user license agreement, can spy on your computer. It can basically see everything you're running. You know, it can scan your hard drive and transmit information to EA to either sell to advertisers, which, I mean, that's what I'm speculating, or use for other stuff. I mean, think about it. Are you using a pirated version of Photoshop? Oh, I think Adobe will want to hear about that. Well, now we've got a program on there that you have willingly agreed to use, and we can use that to sell information to other companies. And it's, I don't know, like, if the license agreement was just written poorly, but I scanned through it and I looked at these parts of the legalese, and it's there. Like, it's there. They can look at everything you have on your computer. And they can identify, like, you know, trends in your gameplay, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really scary to think that if I want to play Battlefield 3 on the PC, I have that. And it doesn't surprise me at all that people are like, well, Pirate Bay, here I come, because there's no fucking way that I'm going to download something like that to play a game that I wanted to support, but you are now driving me away from by doing shitty stuff like this. And I don't like that at all. No, I don't think no one likes that.
I feel like we must be misinterpreting that somehow. Like, that just, I don't know. There's going to be such heavy backlash on this if it, like, people start picking up on it.
Yeah,
like, I don't know. It just seems like EA is dropping the ball with Battlefield in general this generation.
I mean, Battlefield, but I want to get FIFA 12 on PC.
Well, I'm just talking about, like, yeah, that, I mean, stuff like the EA Pass, the, you know, the Origins thing, and all of these, with Season Ticket and all of these little things, like, the nickel and diamond, they're not thinking about the long-term effect this will have on their product.
Well, a fortunate thing about Season Ticket, at least, is that, you know, the recent numbers came in and, like, nobody bought it. So that's one way that people are going to just say, fuck you, EA, like, it's unbelievable. Well, just how douchey they've been, you know, this year. Just this year, you know, they were fine last year. They put out some quality stuff, and then out of nowhere, they're like, let's go back to our shitty ways and piss off everybody, and then we'll blame, you know, oh, the PC market, you know, everybody pirated our game because, you know, PC market, we don't want them to develop for it anymore because of piracy issues. It's like, well, if you're, you know, making them download software that is a direct competitor to a service that they already use, you know, that being Steam, and you're going to make it spy on them and sell their information to people, then, yeah, fuck no, they're not going to buy that. It pisses me off that they have the balls to do that. And at first, you know, I was defending Origin, you know, I don't know if you guys saw that, like, article I wrote, but it's like, to make it a mandatory thing, it's fine, but to make it a mandatory thing and make it so that it can tell anybody, they can find anything they want about you, that's ridiculous. That is just ridiculous.
Yeah, because I could be wrong, but it came out that you don't even have to run the client to play the game, do you? Like, you just use the service to download it with, and then you don't actually have to run the client? Is that how that works?
I
was thinking, like, I heard that, and I thought, okay, that's great. Like, I don't have to have another thing running. They're handling this pretty well, and whatever, whatever. But now this coming out, I can't see myself ever downloading that, if that's true. Like,
yeah, and you would never buy from that service, right?
Never. No. God, no.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason why anybody ever would. So I think that if it's just like I said, if, like, the EULA is just, like, written really weirdly, like, for instance, let's say that they want to collect data about EA games only. Like, they can scan your hard drive for EA games and nothing else, and that's all the data they can use, then that's fine, you know what I mean? Like, there's no problem with that, because Steam does the same exact thing. You know, with any Valve game you own, or with any game downloaded through Steam, they, you know, they obviously have to scan your hard drive to, you know, make it accessible in the browser that they have, and things like that. That's fine, no big deal. But if it's for everything on your computer, everything, that is just something that I can't get behind, you know, and I can see why people are like, well, fuck it, thanks for saving me $60. I was gonna give you guys my money, but, you know, now I'm just gonna get my game through less legal means.
Well, I don't think we should condone piracy.
Oh, no, I'm not. don't get me wrong. I'm probably still going to buy the game, but this is for the first time ever, like legitimately ever. This is for the first time that I've ever like thought to myself, well, now I don't feel so bad for them for getting pirated. I'm not saying you should go out and do it. I'm just saying that it's not shocking to me that people would, you know, torrent this game or whatever. And I think that people are just like pissed off because they're like, I love DICE. You know, I want to give DICE my money for legitimately creating a game that looks like it's going to actually advance a franchise rather than just copy and paste like another game that we know that's coming out this year in November. And
could you narrow it down anymore?
You know, it's a huge bummer for me. And I really think that like EA needs to either like say, whoa, no. This is not at all what this is. Or people need to like get up in arms about this and really say, hey, like if you want our money and we want to support you and we want to believe and like we want to make this like a genuinely easy process for everybody, take this out, you know, make this so that everybody that downloads this game and wants to buy this game legitimately isn't getting the short end of the stick versus those who steal it. You know, that's what pisses me off the most. It's ridiculous. I can't believe that this is happening. I'm just so upset.
So it seems. Wow, so that went longer than I thought it would.
Sorry,
but,
yeah.
It's okay. Moving on. We're going to do what you've been saying. And, Chad, do you want to kick us off? As long as you haven't been playing StarCraft.
I switched to Terran, actually, because I was so pissed off about the way Protoss was just getting butt-fucked every day. So I figured, okay, I'll play Terran. 3 days
I said StarCraft.
Shut up. Don't interrupt me, bitch. Train of thought lost. Right. Yeah, so 3 days after I switched to Terran, they patched it, and now Protoss...
No, we're not talking about StarCraft here.
So I'm just saying. I'm gonna keep playing Protoss, and it's gonna be good. I tried to play The Witcher. I put some effort into it, and then I booted it up, went into my quest log, and said, fuck, and then stopped playing The Witcher. Because I think I've got like 20 like open quests at the time, and I'm just like, no. I can't even begin to understand what I'm doing in this game right now. So that'll be for later, I guess.
Mm.
So other than StarCraft, which I'm clearly not allowed to talk about, dick...
Don't make it sound like it's a new rule.
Fair enough. I've known that for a while. I've been playing Deus Ex. A lot of Deus Ex, actually.
How is that?
It's really, really good. I don't know. I can't really speak to the quality of the gunplay so much because I'm pretty much playing that game as a ghost.
So funny. That's exactly what my friend said. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, because, I don't know, that just seems to me to be the most fun way to do it. So that's how I've been doing it. And it's going really well. I feel like people who are really big fans of the original Deus Ex might be a little disappointed just because it's not as open as the previous one. At least not as far as I've gotten, which is only a couple missions in. But it's very linear, but there's a lot of room to kind of experiment within that linearity. So it's like you're following a corridor to get from place A to place B, and that's kind of how it goes. But
nothing wrong with that.
But you can sometimes there will be a vent in a wall that you can climb in, or there will be multiple ways you can kind of work your way around a big room. So there is some degree of experimentation you can go into, so it's not all bad. I just feel like the Deus Ex purists out there are going to be a little disappointed. But they were probably going to be disappointed no matter how this game ended up anyway.
Okay. One more thing, and we were going to touch on this later, but we might as well since you actually have played it. Have you gotten to any of the boss battles yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. Because I've heard a lot of people gripe with the game seems to deal with the fact that it forces these boss battles, and it kind of changes the dynamic of the game because, like, it's a game all about option and freedom, and then you're kind of forced into a shoot-off for these boss battles, and that seems to be the breaking point for a lot of people. Not that they don't enjoy the game, but that does seem to be, like, it's a great game, but, and boss battles seems to be that but, and it, you know, we were going to talk about this, is like, are there games that no longer need the notion of a boss battle in them anymore?
I think that need to stop. Yeah, I think for the most part, I don't know how. Go ahead and talk about it, Jack, because I need to think about this for a second.
All right. Well, I feel like boss battles are kind of really don't. I've never really liked boss battles, to be honest. It's kind of always been the type of thing where I'm like, well, I'm gonna do it because it's here and I have to progress, but I have never once been playing a game and been like, oh, sweet, I'm going to fight a boss now. I can't wait.
I kind of agree with you, but I do feel as if that, you know, the term boss battles, when I think of boss battles in certain games like Gears of War or things like that, they aren't really that great, you know? And when I think of a boss battle, I typically think of, like, in recent years, let me think, like Vanquish does a great job of a game like that has boss battles that make sense to me, or Bayonetta. Like, that's funny because they're two like third person action games, but like,
yeah, Japanese.
Yeah, but that's the thing, like, but the Japanese, like, they do such fun boss battles. Their boss battles are so much fun, and Western developers are just like, well, you kind of run around and shoot this guy and then he dies, and it's like, no, that's not fun. And that's kind of what I'm getting from the Deus Ex ones, where it's just like, oh, get in the cover, shoot him, get in the cover, shoot him, you know, and you just find out his patterns, and that's fine. You do that in a lot of other games too, but not to, like, the extremity that basically, like, a game like Ninja Gaiden does. You know, when Ninja Gaiden does boss battles, it's like, you have to fight this boss, like, four times, and then, like, another boss comes in, and you're just like, holy shit, this is so hard, but it feels like a boss. And then another game that did it really well was Zelda. But in today's society, people have kind of lost this, like, they've lost track of what a boss battle is supposed to be. And they're supposed to be hard. You're supposed to die a number of times on those boss battles. And developers are just so into, like, let's make the game, you can play through it, you know, all the way. And I don't like that.
I think, again, this goes back to, like, the mentality, as we said, it seems to be a mostly Japanese thing, is the fact that we have the emergence of shooters, and I don't think shooters necessarily own themselves well to boss battles, because for the most part, usually what it isn't like a grand challenge or anything, or finding a weak spot. It's about how much ammo you can dump into a person.
Right.
And it just becomes more frustrating than fun. Like you mentioned, Gears of War, and if two boss battles that stands out in the first one is the one with the what do you call those big
Berserker.
People? Berserker. And, you know, like, just trying to get them outside so you can use the Hammer of Dawn on them. And, I mean, it's, you know, like, it's a new weapon and it's a powerful weapon, but it's not really much of a boss battle. It's just you dodging until you can actually aim for, like, 10 seconds.
Right, no, it's a sequence. It's an interactive sequence. That's all it really is. It's not a boss battle.
Yeah. And well, that's the thing. A lot of people do just kind of do that, where the boss battles just kind of become either really extended quick time events or, like, these interactive cinematics where, like, you'll do something which triggers, like, a sequence. An example of that, I guess, would be Resident Evil 5, which was big on that, especially the Wesker battle at the end where...
Which was, like, so hard on professional. Oh, my God. But it's so much fun. Keep going.
Yeah, and it was kind of annoying because most of the time it isn't about your skill. It's about how fast you can press a button during a cutscene, because if you miss, especially like the one like where he shoots you in the ceiling or whatever, you have to redo the entire boss battle. And that wasn't because you weren't fast. You know, it wasn't because you weren't skilled enough. It wasn't because you weren't prepared. It's because you couldn't press a button fast enough.
Right. I agree. I do think... I think Resident Evil 4 had really good bosses. I think Resident Evil 5 did have good bosses too, but 4 had better bosses, in my opinion.
Well, 4, I think most people consider it a better game.
It is, and that's why I'm buying the HD remake on the 20th. Anyway, I feel like
Metal Gear had really good boss battles as well.
Oh, it did!
All the Metal Gear games have really had them.
That's a great point. Like, The End? No. Was it The End? Yeah, The End.
The End was really good.
That was a fun one. You know what's funny is I totally forgot to find the sniper rifle, so I had to fight him with, like, my USP-45. And it was just... it wasn't happening, man. I was like, I would see the glint and I would just like shoot wildly into the bush just hoping for a hit, and I would usually die. But I managed to like kind of sneak around and finally find him, but you know, when he sleeps or whatever, it's just they're all so unique and fun. And it's cool that I didn't have to actually play that boss battle the way the developers had intended it to for me to get past it and have fun with it. Maybe I had more fun with that.
Not playing it the way the developers intended. The first time I played, I missed. I didn't fight him. Cause, you know, well, spoilers, I guess, for this 80-year-old game. But if you, what was it? Oh yeah, if you, when you come up, you see him sitting on the docks in his wheelchair or whatever. And, like, the end is just kind of sitting there, and they wheel him out. It's, like, a little bit before you actually fight him in the boss battle, and you can kill him right there while he's just sitting.
Really?
Like, I didn't even know that he was a boss in the game. The first time I played, I just shot him in the head while he was sitting there, and then that was how that ended.
Oh, my God. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard. So you're just like, I wonder if I can... Yep, okay, he's dead, I win.
Yeah. And then you hear people talk, oh, the end is so good, such a good boss battle. And I'm like, what? I actually just shot him in the head once, and then he And then I found out that, no, there's this whole other boss battle, so I went back and started... Like, I went played another playthrough or whatever, and fought him for real, and that was cool too. But it's like, it was so crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess what we're coming to is the conclusion that most people seem to draw is that boss battles still have a place in certain video games, but not all of them, and shoehorning them in doesn't really work. I think an example of that is Mass Effect, to me, I don't think has great boss battles. I think Halo's kind of hit or miss with their boss battles. I think first-person shooters in general are kind of hit or miss with their boss battles. I think, you know, they work in, like, RPGs, they work in, like, platformers, they, I mean, fighting games, I think it depends on the person. I don't like them for the most part, but, you know, some people do.
I like boss battles. I think they're fun, but you need to die. That's the point. If you don't die, it's not a fun boss battle. That's the way I see it.
I don't think you necessarily need to die, but I do think it needs to kind of challenge you more than, like, a normal character or enemy in the game, where it's not just like, oh, you can do the same thing and a person died and just have more health. You need to have some type of strategy, you know, like, it should be, and you mentioned Zelda, and Zelda usually, you know, does it because it's centered around the idea of it, but, you know, like, where you're introduced to a new item and then you have to use that item in a different and creative way to, usually defeat the dungeon boss or whatever. Stuff like that instead of just like, oh, just kind of hit him in the face and be done with it. What have you been playing, Adrian?
Oh, I have been playing the most difficult game I've ever played in my life, and it's Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Online Edition, and it's quite literally the hardest game I've played. Like, it is so absolutely unforgiving and so technical, but at the same time, like, it's so rewarding. And it's a game that, let me put it this way, if I had not started playing Street Fighter games with Street Fighter 4, and I had, you know, instead decided to play Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, I definitely would not be as big of a fighting game fan now as, or if I'd play that game, because it's so hard. And like Street Fighter 4, I go and I play that, I'm just like, wow, this is like considerably easier than Third Strike. And it's the first time I've ever played Third Strike. So I've been playing that pretty religiously, since Wednesday, anyway. And then, let's see, I don't think I've been playing anything else, really. I'm going to be investing in Deus Ex, because everybody I talk to says it's a good game, and, you know, Chad's been saying that it's a pretty decent one, so that kind of like pushed me over the edge. And just, other than that, really nothing. I'm really stoked for Gears 3. I can't wait for that. I think hopefully Deus Ex holds me over till that. And then other than that, Resident Evil 4 HD remake is going to be good, but I've just been having a lot of fun with Marvel and my old standbys. Nothing new here, really. Doesn't really need to be though.
Yeah, no. As long as your standby is not StarCraft, which is the only game we have yet just so far.
There's nothing wrong with StarCraft.
There's nothing wrong with
it. It's an addicting game. Yeah.
We never denied it's a good game. We never denied that there's anything wrong with it. The fact of the matter is, if given the opportunity, Chad would have spoken about it for the last 13 months. Which is why we blocked him from talking about it.
Nothing wrong with it. I understand that.
That's kind of true, I guess.
So yeah, and as I mentioned before, I've been playing Xenoblade, which I imported from the great, no, I'm not going to finish that, but I imported from Europe because it always kind of intrigued me, and as I said, I do like colorful games. And I will just be upfront, I've never really been the biggest RPG gamer in the world. Most people usually know that about me, I'm just not a RPG guy. But this game does so much, I don't want to say right, it does so much different that it really works for me, and it helps, especially being like the RPG noob that I tend to be. It kind of streamlines a lot of the process for me. Like, for instance, not that you don't have to worry about health, but you don't have any type of healing items for the most part, so like, usually the only type of healing you do is if somebody has the magic ability to heal or whatever. That's about it. Other than that, you know, like, everything else is, like, once your battle's done, you automatically kind of refill your health. You go about the dungeon and stuff like that. Enemies are on the map kind of like on the Tales of franchise where you can see them and interact with them. But there's different types of enemies. There's some who won't attack you until you start a battle. There's some who, if they spot you, they'll start chasing you and they'll engage you. Some do it on sight, some do it on sound. Some will do it if you're in battle and you use a certain type of magic. So they'll join the fray, and stuff like that. Then there's, unique monsters, which are pretty much like mini boss battles of sorts, or like, you know, area specific monsters, and they tend to vary in levels. I mean, the enemies are on the map, and it's a type of game where it's not like the enemies kind of level up as you level up. So, for instance, in the first area, you can find people who are I've seen up to like level 70 in the first area, and in the second area, well, I guess the third area of the game, there are creatures that are up to 75, 85, and I was like a 13 at the time. And, I mean, if you want, you can try to engage them in battle. It probably won't work out that well. But you can, try that. So yeah, I like the fact that everything's kind of there for you. There's a ton of side quests. I mean, so far I have to have completed something like 75 of them, and there's still so many more to go.
And why haven't I really heard about this game? That's interesting. It sounds like there's actually a lot of, like, you know, they cut a lot of the extra grinding crap out of, you know, a pretty, what sounds like a traditional but fleshed out RPG experience, and I'm wondering why something like this. Why are these games always on, like, the Wii? That's, like, what I don't understand is, like, these little gems that come out of nowhere.
Well, one, this is made by Nintendo, so that's why it's on a Wii.
Oh, okay.
Two, you haven't heard about it because it's not in America. Like I said, I had to import it because it's out. It came out in Japan last year, and Nintendo of Europe localized it this past week or the week before. And okay. Nintendo of America has been sitting on it for a while, so I don't know why. Four is like the JRPG is kind of a dead genre at all be told, so people don't really discuss it as much anyhow. Even less so when you have to deal with the fact that it's on the Wii and it's a Nintendo-made game who aren't promoting it. So
interesting. I feel they should definitely adapt, like, you know, do the localization and bring a game like that into the Americas. Did I say the Americas? I meant to say America.
I think they should. And it's a really novel game. I mean, like I said, it does a lot of stuff smartly. Like, for instance, with the side quests and stuff like that, one of the things you sometimes get with side quests in RPGs is the, I don't know how you would describe it, but the back and forth you have to do sometimes to get, you know, to finish it, like, you'll get a quest from somebody, you go do the quest, then you have to come find that person again, and you could have got that quest, like, 20 hours ago, and you forgot about it, so you don't remember who gave it to you, and you have to find them in this small town or whatever. So what this game does is, like, there's certain types of quests, for the most part, that if you've either already completed them, like, if it's a catch, if it's, like, get 5 of these items, and you have 6 in your inventory, once you get that quest and you have those items in your inventory, your quest is done. There's no, like, you have to find five more of these. It's already done. So it gives you credit for it. Or if it's defeat a certain number of enemies, if you go out and you defeat five of them, the quest is done. There's no more going to find somebody to get your reward. Once you complete the task, you get the rewards right on the map, right there, right then. Huh. The same thing works if there are quests where you have to go back and forth between people, but it works in the sense that you complete the task and the person's right there, you can just turn around and talk to them again. So it's none of that, oh, you have to leave this area and then come back and find them and get them to talk again. It's like, I did this yesterday. It was kind of annoying, but it was much easier where, since I already completed most of the task, I had to go back and forth between two people who were literally standing next to each other. I assume that this technique is supposed to be in different areas. But basically, I would just go to one, get whatever I need, talk to the person behind me, go back and forth, and I did this like four or five times, and then the quest is over because everything was kind of handled in that way. And it does, it handles that well. And the other thing is, and I should have mentioned this, is that it marks everybody on the map for you. So if it's somebody who can give you a quest, they're marked with a white exclamation point, so you know exactly where they are in proximity to you. And if it's somebody you need to talk to finish a quest, they're marked in a red exclamation point. Or if it's something you need to find for a quest, it does that as well. And something else it does as far as quests goes is it marks important items for you in case you collect it before you get the quest, so you don't end up selling it or getting rid of it. So like, I've collected stuff that I would need later on in the game, and it's like, oh, you're going to need these. And they do it by the game uses a division system, which comes into play in the story as well as in battles. I'll get to that in a second. So it will show you a reference like, oh, so-and-so is going to need this, so I'll keep it. And then you might not know the character, but when you meet them, you're like, oh, okay, this is who I'm collecting this for, and I'll give it to him when the time comes. So, yeah, there's stuff like that. Like I said, the battle system, the division system works in the story and stuff, where part of it right now seems to be like how we can control our fate and how we can pick or choose our futures. And it's interesting, because like the main character has visions, and he can... he has visions and he can sometimes change the future, but sometimes it's not possible. So it's dealing with how much of the future can I change about what I know. Right now, the last major chapter story point, I'm pretty sure told me what was going to happen near the end of the game, but it gives you such vague, ideas of, the characters who are going to be, MJ and what's happening that it's kind of like, what's going to happen? Who are these people? When do I meet them? But it's also like, crap, this person's going to die. How do I fix this between now and the end of the game? So I like the way the story's told. I like how they simplify out of the RPG elements where it's not a tedious task. Because like I said, I've completed something like 75 side quests already. And I'm only, I'm like 20 hours in. So, it's not, it becomes easy to do when it's like, oh, I'll just talk to a bunch of people in town for like half an hour. And then I'll just go out in the land and I'll kill monsters and I'll collect these items. And it works because everything kind of being kept track of for me. So it's like, oh, I collected two of these, one more and I'm done. And then the quest is completed and stuff like that. It's no more like, oh crap, I have to return to the village and pick up these people now. Huh. Talk to these folks. The battle system, and I have not played Final Fantasy XII, so I can't really comment on it, but other people compare it to that, where it's your characters auto attack for the most part if you leave them be. But you have special arts, and different arts, give you different abilities and stuff like that. I use the main character, whose name's Joke, and his arts are mostly physical attacks and stuff like that. So, depending on where you are on the enemy, if he attacks, he has a one move. If he attacks from the back, it does more damage because that's where the attack is strong from. If you attack from the side with certain things, it works as well. There's attacks that dizzy opponents, and then your party can topple them over. And once they're toppled, you can use different moves and stuff like that. And then he wields the Monado, which was a kind of interesting twist. It's how everybody has kind of like their ultimate weapon. It seems to be his ultimate weapon, which you get at the start of the game. But as you go through the game, its powers is unlocked because he doesn't know how to control it. A really fascinating JRPG. It's probably one of the best games I've played so far this year. Granted, I'm still only 20 hours in, so there's a lot of game to go.
Wow.
But the fact of the matter is that I'm playing 20 hours in a JRPG and actually still talking about it. Because I usually get bored about 12 or 15 hours in, because the problem I have with a lot of JRPGs is they don't know how to pace themselves well. Like, you get a very slow start, and then you have to grind and grind for hours and hours to level up. Where this game seems to be pretty consistent, you level up maybe, I want to say every hour or so. I'm at level 28, I've been 20 hours, so roughly you level up like 1.5 times per hour. The other thing is that the system that they, you know, you level up by getting XP in boss battles, but you also do it for, there's achievements in the game, so like, you know, killing a certain number of enemies, you get XP for that. Walking a certain number of miles, you get XP for that. Discovering locations, which I thought was a very nifty idea, you get XP for. So it gives you a reason to explore this vast world, and you get XP for that. You get XP, one of my favorite is you get, it's an achievement for not participating in a battle. So you just start a battle and you make your two party members do it, and you get an achievement for that. You get achievements for like beating these unique monsters, completing the side quests and stuff like that. And so yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff involved in here. So I really wish Nintendo of America would bring it out, because it is a fun and unique game.
It sounds like it has a lot of like just like stream, like I said, streamlining, which is really nifty.
Yeah. Which seems to be, and that's the other thing, and this is probably one of the biggest reasons I actually do side quests, is that it has a fast travel system. I think I'm in like the fifth major area of the game. So, you know, like in some RPGs, they do, you know, later on you get an airship or whatever, or you'd have to backtrack all the way back to the first area. Here you open up the map, there's usually like 5 or 6 landmarks in an area. You pick a landmark, boom, you're right there. Nothing, no fuss, no muss. And it's good to go, because I've done it where it's like, you know, like there's a guy in the first area where you have to go to the craft gems. Gems are kind of like, you know, special abilities you put on your weapons and your kills to make you faster, stronger, more HP and stuff like that. And he's in the first area. I can just beam to him whenever I want. I can waste 30 minutes crafting gems, and I'm good to go. I think streamline is the key word here. It really just takes a lot of JRPG elements and just kind of, you know, brings them to a modern era where they're no longer tedious, and the game flows really well for it.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that somebody is at least advancing that genre in particular.
Well, you see, and here's the downside, and this is probably one of the few times I can say it. It would have been so much better if anybody but Nintendo made it, just because there would have been a chance that it would have gotten some type of widespread, you know, a release or something, even if it's something, you know, even if somebody has had to pick it up. But Nintendo is kind of, they're risk averse. Sometimes they just don't go for the big risk, which is kind of odd for a company that kind of built their reputations in the past decade or so over taking these huge risks that they won't do it for certain games. And the other thing, and it's a very minor thing, but it does add to it for me personally, is the fact that since it is a European import, that all it casts in has British accents, which makes it a very unique game, because you don't have many games with British accents in general.
That's very true.
That is kind of cool.
So yeah, like I said, if you have the opportunity, it's really easy to mod your Wii, and this technically doesn't endorse piracy, because you can mod your Wii to play imports like I did. It's a very simple process, which probably takes no more than 20 minutes. The problem is finding the game. Apparently it's sold out across Europe right now, which would be a good thing if not for the fact that apparently Nintendo undershipped it, it seems.
So no one has it ever?
I mean, it's only been like a week, but it seems like nobody really has it in stock. So yeah, there's that.
Interesting. Sounds like a sweet game.
It has its moments, and I really recommend it if you want it, especially if you're an RPG fan.
If I owned a Wii, I would.
it's one of those things where I think, it's one of those games I think that literally kind of answers every critique Nintendo has this generation. It's a game made with modern values. It has voice acting. It has, you know, cinematic cutscenes. It's a new IP. It's a quote-unquote hardcore game. So it's all these things people criticize them for, and they kind of just shove it in the back and want it to be ignored. So, you know, take that as you will for a company like them.
That's weird. That does not seem like the right thing to do.
No, and I'm hoping, because they have two other JRPGs that that Europe is getting next year that they haven't said anything about America getting. I'm not as hopeful for that story. That kind of looks more like not a modern RPG, but it has that whole brown scale going for it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's made by the guy. It's made by the guy who created the original Final Fantasy. It pretty much still is the name Final Fantasy: The Last Story, but. I just want to touch on that, and I have my impressions up, which was after 2 hours. Hopefully I can get something up after 20 hours, because I wanted to do a review for it, but apparently it's taken its time, so I'll put up impressions, because I'm really, really impressed with this game so far, and I really want people to check it out. Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
I think I'm all good to go. I got my hatred out with the origin stuff, so.
And Chad, anything you want to hate on this week?
Well, I mean, don't open that question.
That's Pandora's box.
Yeah, no, the things that I could hate. Ooh, man, are there many. I'll spare you, though. Now, today is not a rant day.
Okay, and next week, I believe, is episode 45, which will be our fall preview show, which I'm excited for. It's one of my favorite shows to do outside of the Game of the Year show we did last year. And there's a ton of great games to talk about, and depending on how it works, because there's a lot of great games to come out this fall. We might do it split into two episodes, we'll see. For Chad, Adrian, myself, before I go, actually, yes, I want to promote the iTunes. I'm really, really trying to get more reviews up on there because, I mean, giving us reviews helps other people find this show, and other people finding this show helps us to actually want to do it more often. I have fun doing it. I don't know what the rest of you.
I fucking hate it.
So that means Chad jumps it because he doesn't know how to show emotion like a normal human.
Fair
you
enough.
You won't deny it.
I can't.
Just go there. Usually the link is posted with our podcast. You know, it doesn't have to be anything wrong. You don't have to write Shakespearean. It doesn't have to be a soliloquy. We just want reviews. We want more people. You know, if you enjoy the show, just, you know, give us whatever you want, even though I prefer 5 stars. And, you know, it helps us get a broader audience. In addition to that, I guess we can talk about this next week when we do the fall preview show. But the week after, we're going to have a poll on the site for your most anticipated game in the fall and stuff like that. And hopefully we get a lot of coverage of these big fall games for the site, even if it's, you know, simple, like Power Hour, which is a nice feature for us who don't have, like, 20 hours in a week to beat a game, like some other people seem to do. Once again, for Chad, Adrian, and myself, this has been Duo in episode 44.
Take it easy, guys.
Peace.